Good morning, everybody. Today is Monday, April 9th, 2016. No, May. It's May, May 9th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup of Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Monday, everyone. It is 49 degrees, partly cloudy here in upstate New York. Looks like we have some rain pushing in from the Midwest into the Northeast. So it's going to get drippy again, but hey, all the trees are puffing everywhere, and my throat is scratchy, so that's a good thing, because it means that spring has sprung. All right, where do we leave off on Friday? We titled the show, Stem Cells, DNA Thermometers, Microbiome, and Mental Health. We talked about a lot of interesting things. Actually spent a lot of time on stem cells and mad science gone mad, bringing people back from the dead. Or was that the day before? It might even have been the day before, bringing people back from the dead with stem cells. But we ended up the show looking at the microbiome. And how, actually, I think it was the last couple stories, how coffee and wine are good for your microbiota. Yeast infections are linked to mental illness, and the good old Billy Gates Foundation pays college students $900 to eat genetically modified bananas that haven't gone out to the public yet for testing. So I want to continue on the microbiome today. There's been a ton of research over the last couple months that I've seen published. We've tackled the microbiome quite a number of times before, showing how there is a direct connect by your gut bacteria to your brain. And they have now found that it is directly responsible for moods and for health and all kinds of other things. I talked on Friday in regards to the five different bacterial colonies that they've discovered live on our body, between our skin, the oral, if I can remember them all, because I don't. There's the skin, there's the oral, there's the gut, there's the fecal, and the vaginal, I believe, were the five. In each of those five different cultures, all have wars. They get wiped out. When you ingest things, it affects them. When there's chemicals in your food, it can wipe out bacteria. I was watching last night. I sat up. I was watching a bunch of clips. We got some stuff to cover here today. I'm going to play some stuff. I'm going to read some stuff. But what was pretty interesting is in the end, it ends up, and we already knew this from Dr. Huber, glyphosate is a very potent antibiotic. Remember him saying that? And I actually have that clip queued up. Glyphosate is a very potent antibiotic. Well, what happens when you take antibiotics? Oh, it kills all your bacteria. So, you know, even though they're blaming superbugs on the overuse of antibiotics, because, of course, everything is your fault, just like climate change, just like, you know, being unsustainable, it's all your fault. It's not your fault. You know, we've been damaged. And our health has been damaged. I was watching, and I queued this up. I have an interview with Dr. Mercola and this neurologist who first started to find the connections between the blood or the gut and the brain. He's done all kinds of research. He wrote a couple books, and he was talking about how all the different pieces go together. But one of the things that he was saying is that and how amazing is it that the gut bacteria is so connected to the brain, by the way. So as a neurologist here now, he had to take like microbiology. But, you know, everything that we eat has an effect on this. And here we are eating glyphosate-laden food. It's everywhere in our environment. It's in our rainwater even. And as we're eating this, it's damaging our microbiome. And this doctor said, he's like, it's so amazing because for millions, if not thousands, but millions of years, our genome and our DNA really kind of pretty much stayed the same. And we have this massive change that is happening right now. And I mean, this is a doctor saying this, and he wasn't talking about like, oh, the time is coming and our DNA is changing. He was like, oh, it's in our environment. We got all these poisons, and look at how it's affected all these bacterial colonies in our body that were necessary for bodily function. And because they're so broken, it's actually made our DNA change to be able to compensate for all the damage that's been done. But in the meantime, it could end up with all these consequences like reams of Western diseases that we never ran into before. So if we can get there, and I'm hoping, I got 25 tabs lined up, but I did them all nice and special last night, brand new. And then just before I came in here, we had a crash. But haha, I thought about it and put them all in a notepad last night. So hopefully everything stays copacetic today. All right, let's take a look at the wiki for a second. What is the Human Microbiome Project? We read a little bit of this on Friday, but for anyone who hasn't been keeping up to speed, this is the new hot market where all kinds of investment dollars are going into, as well as DARPA. DARPA was doing all kinds of research, but now it's out there and all the rich tech billionaires are investing. The Human Microbiome Project was the United States National Institute of Health Initiative. And National Institute of Health was the same one that's involved in all this, the Brain Project and a lot of the, wait a minute, weren't they even in on with 23andMe trying to come up with curing diseases via DNA? They were in also on that, bringing the brain dead back to life with little mini brain balls, gave them the ethical stamp of approval. The Human Microbiome Project was a United States National Institute of Health initiative with the goal of identifying and characterizing the microorganisms which are found in association with both healthy and diseased humans. Launched in 2008, it was a five-year project, kind of like Gilligan's Island, or Babylon 5, best characterized by a feasibility study that had a total budget of $115 million. The ultimate goal of this was similar to the National Institute of Health sponsored microbiome projects, that was to test how changes in the human microbiome are associated with human health or disease. Well, can you believe it? But they actually figured it out. This topic is not currently understood, they say. Important components of the Human Microbiome Project were culture-independent methods of microbial community characterization, such as metagenomics, which provide a broad genetic perspective on a single microbial community, as well as an extensive genome sequencing of a given microbial community. The microbiologies of five bodily sites were emphasized. There's oral, skin, vaginal, gut, and nasal lung. And the project was also financed deep sequencing of 16S RNA sequence is amplified from human subjects. So, yay. Well, I'll tell you what, since this wiki was written, they've come a long way. There was a TED Talk that I had mentioned, I don't know, it was probably Friday, about the guy talking about all the different colonies and how they interacted together, how they've been mapping them in real time. I don't know, he talks kind of fast, and he's got like an Australian accent. Oh, damn it. All right, we're here. Maybe if I turn that down. So let's listen to him for a few minutes. I don't want to listen to the whole interview because, though it is pretty good, but it's a long one. It's like 17 minutes, and it's going to eat up my whole show. But we're going to get a little taste of it. I'll link to it in the notes if you guys want to watch the whole thing. But I want you to hear about just kind of what I've been saying, because then I have some other things we're going to tie in. So let's play. TED.
We humans have always been very concerned about the health of our bodies, but we haven't always been that good at figuring out what's important. Take the ancient Egyptians, for example, very concerned about the body parts they thought they needed in the afterlife, but they left some parts out. This part, for example. Although they very carefully preserved the stomach, the lungs, the liver, and so forth, they just mushed up the brain, drained it out through the nose, and threw it away. Which makes sense, really, because what does a brain do for us anyway? But imagine if there were a kind of neglected organ in our bodies that weighed just as much as the brain, and in some ways was just as important to who we are, that we knew so little about and treated with such disregard. And imagine if, through new scientific advances, we were just beginning to understand its importance to how we think of ourselves. Wouldn't you want to know more about it? Well, it turns out that we do have something just like that. Our gut. Or rather, its microbes. But it's not just the microbes in our gut that are important. Microbes all over our body turn out to be really critical to a whole range of differences that make different people who we are. So, for example, have you ever noticed how some people get bitten by mosquitoes way more often than others? It turns out that everyone's anecdotal experience out camping is actually true. For example, I seldom get bitten by mosquitoes, but my partner Amanda attracts them in droves. And the reason why is that we have different microbes on our skin that produce different chemicals that the mosquitoes detect. Now, microbes are also really important in the field of medicine. So, for example, what microbes you have in your gut determine whether particular painkillers are toxic to your liver. They also determine whether or not other drugs will work for your heart condition. And if you're a fruit fly, at least, your microbes determine who you want to have sex with. We haven't demonstrated this in humans yet, but maybe it's just a matter of time before we find out. So our microbes are performing a huge range of functions. They help us digest our food, they help educate our immune system, they help us resist disease, and they may even be affecting our behavior. So what would a map of all these microbial communities look like? Well, it wouldn't look exactly like this, but it's a helpful guide for understanding biodiversity. Different parts of the world have different landscapes and organisms that are immediately characteristic of one place or another or another. With microbiology, it's kind of the same, although I've got to be honest with you, all the microbes essentially look the same under a microscope. So instead of trying to identify them visually, what we do is we look at their DNA sequences. And in a project called the Human Microbiome Project, NIH funded this $173 million project where hundreds of researchers came together to map out all the A's, T's, G's, and C's in all of these microbes in the human body. And so when we take them together, they look like this. It's a bit more difficult to tell who lives where now, isn't it? What my lab does is develop computational techniques that allow us to take all these terabytes of sequence data and turn them into something that's a bit more useful as a map. And so when we do that with the human microbiome data from 250 healthy volunteers, it looks like this. Each point here represents all the complex microbes in an entire microbial community. See, I told you they basically all look the same. So what we're looking at is each point represents one microbial community from one body site of one healthy volunteer. And so you can see that there's different parts of the map in different colors, almost like separate continents. And what it turns out to be is that those, as the different regions of the body, have very different microbes in them. So what we have is we have the oral community up there in green. Over on the other side, we have the skin community in blue, the vaginal community in purple. And then right down at the bottom, we have the fecal community in brown. And we've just over the last few years found out that the microbes in different parts of the body are amazingly different from one another. So if I look at just one person's microbes in the mouth and in the gut, it turns out that the difference between those two microbial communities is enormous. It's bigger than the difference between the microbes in this reef and the microbes in this prairie, right? So this is incredible when you think about it. What it means is that a few feet of difference in the human body makes more of a difference to your microbial ecology than hundreds of miles on Earth. And this is not to say that two people look basically the same in the same body habitat either. So you probably heard that we're all pretty much the same in terms of our human DNA. You're 99.99% identical in terms of your human DNA to the person sitting next to you. But that's not true of your gut microbes. You might only share 10% similarity with the person sitting next to you in terms of your gut microbes. So that's as different as the bacteria in this prairie and the bacteria in this forest. So these different microbes have all these different kinds of functions that I told you about, everything from digesting food to involvement in different kinds of diseases, metabolizing drugs, and so forth. So how do they do all this stuff? Well, in part, it's because although there's just 3 pounds of those microbes in our gut, they really outnumber us. And so how much do they outnumber us? Well, it depends on what you think of as our bodies. Is it our cells? Well, each of us consists of about 10 trillion human cells, but we harbor as many as 100 trillion microbial cells, so they outnumber us 10 to 1. Now, you might think, well, we're human because of our DNA, but it turns out that each of us has about 20,000 human genes, depending on what you count exactly, but as many as 2 to 20 million microbial genes. So whichever way we look at it, we're vastly outnumbered by our microbial symbionts. And it turns out that in addition to traces of our human DNA, we also leave traces of our microbial DNA on everything we touch. We showed in a study a few years ago that you can actually match the palm of someone's hand up to the computer mouse that they use routinely with up to 95% accuracy. So this came out in a scientific journal a few years ago. But more importantly, it was featured on CSI Miami, so you really know it's true. So where do our microbes come from in the first place? Well, if, as I do, you have dogs or kids, you probably have some dark suspicions about that, all of which are true, by the way. So just like we can match you to your computer equipment up by the microbes you share, we can also match you up to your dog. But it turns out that in adults, microbial communities are relatively stable. So even if you live together with someone, you'll maintain your separate microbial identity over a period of weeks, months, even years. It turns out that our first microbial communities depend a lot on how we're born. So babies that come out the regular way, all of their microbes basically look like the vaginal community, whereas babies that are delivered by C-section, all of their microbes instead look like skin. And this might be associated with some of the differences in health associated with cesarean birth, such as more asthma, more allergies, even more obesity, all of which have been linked to microbes now. And when you think about it, until recently, every surviving mammal had been delivered via the birth canal. And so the lack of those protective microbes that we've co-evolved with might be really important for a lot of these different conditions that we now know involve the microbiome. When my own daughter was born a couple of years ago by emergency C-section, we took matters into our own hands and made sure she was coated with those vaginal microbes that she would have got naturally. Now, it's really difficult to tell whether this has had an effect on her health specifically, right? With a sample size of just one child, no matter how much we love her, you don't really have enough of a sample size to figure out what happens on average. But at 2 years old, she hasn't had an ear infection yet, so we're keeping our fingers crossed on that one. And what's more, we're starting to do clinical trials with more children to figure out whether this has a protective effect generally.
How frightening is that? Hold on. That anyone, I mean, there were issues I had been reading about at the time when a child is born C-section. One of the things that they don't get is lung compression as they're passing out through the birth canal. Apparently, passing out through the birth canal helps clear their lungs out of any type of mucus and whatever that was in there from when they were in the amniotic fluid. And there could be some real issues if the baby has not had their lungs cleared even weeks or months after the birth. So I remember learning about that right around the time my daughter was born via C-section, emergency C-section, and being concerned about that. But nobody ever mentioned anything about microbes. You know, what's really interesting is he said that they've linked it to lack of vaginal microbes. He said if they're born via C-section, their body actually has a skin cell culture, not a vaginal culture on it. Well, he said that it was also linked to like diabetes and obesity. Well, wait till you hear this story, and hopefully this will come up. I don't know. I messed with the one machine this morning for 20 minutes to get everything back, and now this machine that was just hunky-dory while this was playing went to syrup mode, but if I can get this to pull up. There was a story that came out this weekend titled "Obesity Could Be as Contagious as a Superbug." What? Yeah, a new study suggests that the microbes in our gut can influence how we put on weight. And because these organisms can move from one person to another, it might be possible to literally catch obesity from others. For the first time, scientists in the UK have shown that one-third of the spores produced by bacteria in the human gut can survive in the open air. Now, I really want to dig deep into this because what I'd like to do is take a look at, I mean, we've talked about microbiome, but they're finding so much more influence than we ever imagined. So I think we're good with this TED Talk. He really established kind of some of the basics, but let's move along a little bit further and find out some of the things that our microbiome and these other microbial communities living in our body actually affect. And we found out, he mentioned your dog. We've done some stories about how you could pick up bacteria from your animals, the dog and your cat. Remember, toxoplasmosis is the bacteria from the cat feces, the fecal colony, that can get into humans and change their behavior. Yes. Well, microbial communities can affect behavior as well. They can affect our health. They can affect the evolution of life on Earth. And who would have thunk it? But not only that, but they can be contagious. So when you get people like Bill Gates making genetically modified bananas and paying college students $900 to eat your bananas in a test, you know, these kids don't know anything better. They're half, you know, clueless. And they're in college. They can't afford anything. Ink the dotted line with your consent, just like those Indian girls did over in India with that Gardasil vaccine that caused all the damage. Ink the 32-page document there, Johnny, that you didn't read, nor do you understand. And eat these genetically modified bananas. Well, as they're doing all of this crazy stuff to our food and adding things and CRISPRing now, they can CRISPR genes in food. And it completely circumvents any and all type of having to let anyone know, including the FDA, that it's been genetically modified. As they're making all these changes, and then we're ingesting them. And we see now how important our microbiome is, how it is influenced, can be influenced by all kinds of different environmental factors, including what we eat and breathe and drink. They literally, with their foods and medications, because medications change the microbial communities in our bodies as well, they literally could modify us to the point where not only is DNA being modified, but our behavior is being modified. The way we think is being modified, and it's happening with modifications made by people such as Bill Gates and, oh, companies such as Monsanto. So let that sink in for a few minutes, because we've been talking about governmental control, wanting to be able to control you down to the cellular level and nanobots in your blood. And, oh, my God, it's in the future. But it might not even be as synthetic as we thought. It could be. They literally have found the puppeteering controls for biological life. Who would have thunk it? It's the microbe, and that's why there's billions of dollars of research going into it right now. All right, let's skip to the next story. So we have obesity could be as contagious as a superbug. Most of us would say that obesity is a consequence of eating too much, exercising too little, and an unfortunate combination of genes. And of course, it's a Western disease, right? Where we have the majority of the GMO foods in Europe, they don't allow GMOs like they do here. And we have this obesity, diabetic, Western, what do they call it? Metabolic syndrome, Western disease gamut. All the places that we eat GMO foods. Well, says things might not be so simple. A new study suggests that the microbes in our gut can influence how we put on weight, and because of these organisms can move from one person to another, it might be possible to literally catch obesity from others. You know, we had read something a while back about being able to also catch mental illness. And you know, if mental illness, quote unquote, is caused by an imbalance of microbes that then are affecting the chemical balance of the brain. I could see how this is all possible and talk about like bio warfare extraordinaire. If crazy places in the dark recesses and long scary halls of mad science gone mad start to discover all these things, all they gotta do is put some swabs here and there or whatever. I don't know. This is even more frightening than the nanobots. For the first time, scientists in the UK have shown that a third of the spores produced by bacteria in the human gut can survive out in the open air. This implies that people we come into close contact with could influence our gut bacteria as these spores spread through the air. So what? How close? I mean, we go to a public venue? Would we go to a concert? We got 80,000 people in the stadium. Am I going to be breathing in, you know, the closest 1,000 people's gut bacteria and incorporating that into my body? I mean, what does this mean? Well, let's find out. Well, that's not to say that if an obese person sneezes on you, your weight is going to balloon. But many previous studies have shown a link between the makeup of our gut bacteria and our weight. And if these bacteria can exist outside the body, as new research shows, then our own internal ecosystem could be affected by our closest family and friends. And to be clear, the study does not say that spores are definitely jumping from person to person. No, don't worry about it. Just that they have a potential to, and that it's definitely worth a closer investigation. So basically, we have no freaking clue, but put on a seatbelt because here it comes. Super bugs such as, and we talked about this on Friday, Clostridium difficile, that's it, C. difficile bacteria imbalance that happens in your intestines if you've taken antibiotics, is wiped out your good gut cultures and you end up with explosive diarrhea for months or years on end that can't be cured very easily. Superbugs such as C. difficile spread in this exact same way. I think there are definitely diseases that are caused by an imbalance in the microbiota. But if you look at something like inflammatory bowel disease or obesity, that's definitely a possibility. People who live in the same household share similar microbiomes. And genetics only really account for between 7 and 13% of the risk. There are definitely people who are more susceptible to disease, so it could be a combination of things. One hypothesis put forward by the new study is that some diseases tend to run in families, right? But they tend to run in families not because of genetics, but because of shared living spaces rather than because of anything at the genetic level. And it is still in the early days for this research, though, so considering the idea of contagious obesity is an intriguing possibility for the time being. And it's not just contagious obesity. I mean, we're looking at like any type of disease that can be caused by an imbalance in gut bacteria in particular. Like what about leaky gut syndrome? Or, you know, they've even found components to bipolar disorder or Alzheimer's starting in the gut. You know, in one of these other clips that I have queued up, the doctor that Dr. McCullough is interviewing also talks about fecal transplants, and we've talked about that. That was kind of one of the ways they got around curing that C. difficile destruction of the gut microbes. But we had brought up on Friday, you know, if the microbes in your gut can directly influence your brain and you were getting a fecal transplant, you know, God forbid that you had this horrible problem and that ends up being the only treatment because nothing else works, those microbes are going to be somebody else's. So is it going to modify your personality? And they were having some issues with that. And I actually have a story about using gut microbes in mice, some experimentation they did, and it absolutely does change personality. So, you know, the other thing I was thinking, though, is what if you get a product like super greens that come with 10 trillion gut bacteria cultures in them just to keep you healthy. Where are those cultures coming from? And when I ingest those cultures, are they changing my behavior? Like, I have no idea. And I have different products that have different bacterial cultures in them for the gut flora. So if I do one, if I do my super greens over my diatomaceous earth that has it in it, does it change my mood and personality? I mean, I don't know. This just opens up so many dizzying realms of unknown. And honestly, I sat out here till so late last night reading and watching videos, because this is just something that if they can at some point in the future, just as they're cracking this right now, if they can manipulate our gut bacteria and augment, and oh, by the way, it's hot new research area. And I found a company that is financing from who? Oh, you guessed it, Bill Melinda Gates. Yes. To start researching this, but they want to use, they're calling it living therapeutics. And they are creating synthetic bacteria. They can go in and actually be like a little sentry and monitor all your bacterial colonies and make changes anytime they see something happening before you get sick. Just kind of like the DARPA project, like they were talking about for our artificial immune system. And your gut bacteria is tied directly to your immune system. And this might actually be the key. All right, let's finish reading about this. Is obesity contagious? So by developing a new process to isolate gastrointestinal bacteria, we were able to sequence their genomes to understand more about their biology, says one team. We can also store them for long periods of time, making them available for further research. And we're only just beginning to understand the relationship between our internal microbiomes and obesity, though, and a good diet and plenty of exercise remain crucial. And yeah, I'm talking about a good diet. We'll see if I can find that 10-day McDonald's challenge. I don't know if you guys remember that, but it's pretty disturbing. study from 2013 showed that when mice were fed an unhealthy diet, it prevented healthy, lean types of bacteria from flourishing. So be sure to look after the little guys in your gut. Now, you know, not only are we talking about our microbiota being manipulated by what we ingest and whether it's be good or bad food, but don't forget that the majority of our factory farm meat is loaded with antibiotics, and antibiotics kill what? Oh, bacteria. So if you go all out and out and eat for 10 days at McDonald's like this one boy did, I think his dad was a doctor. I don't know if this is the same story or not, but I had read the story once before, and they did samples every day for 10 days, and I think it was just the fecal colonies. It devastated completely his gut bacteria. 10-day McDonald's diet leads to the devastation of man's gut bacteria. This is from last year, May 12th, so just about a year ago. McDonald's, worldwide multi-billion dollar restaurant chain with 62 million American unsuspecting customers. Actually, they're global now on a daily basis, and 75 hamburgers sold every second. Tim Spector, a genetics professor at King's College London, wanted to see how much a person could handle. So he volunteered his son, yeah, this is the same group, as a test subject in his newest experiment, to eat at the Golden Arches for 10 days straight. Well, son says, it felt good for 3 days. Then I slowly went downhill. I became more lethargic. And by a week, my friends thought I had gone a strange gray color. What? And you know, though, I really think, you know, there's some days I look in the mirror, I'm feeling pretty crappy, beat, looking all pale, pasty, and I'm like, man, hoping I'm not getting sick. But you know, if you think about it, it's very possible that you might just need a good dose of microbes, because we're going to find out that these microbes in our gut and all these different parts of our body are a lot of the big chemical transporters that transport chemicals for metabolic processes and our immune system. Like, I can't even get over, again, like I was saying, I said it a few times, but like I was saying again on Friday, just because we can't see it doesn't mean it's not there. That's why I don't ever discount anything anymore, because we learn so much every single day as our technology gets more and more sophisticated. You know, like I said, in the past, 100, 200 years ago, I don't know when it was, but they didn't even believe in, you know, they didn't even know what viruses and bacteria were. It was because you gave the evil stink eye to somebody that you got sick and they had to go burn some witches to make you better. You know, so don't discount anything. Says, I felt good for 3 days and slowly went downhill. I became more lethargic, and by a week, my friends thought I had gone a strange gray color, says Tom. The last few days were a real struggle, and I felt very unwell, but definitely had no addictive withdrawal symptoms. And when I finally finished, I rushed, uncharacteristically, mind you, to the store to get some salads and some fruits. Tom, a 23-year-old college student studying genetics, so that was kind of a neat experiment, at the University of Aberystwyth, sacrificed his body for medicine to better understand how gut microbes and metabolisms work. At least that's what he and his dad had hoped. His father doesn't follow the average American diet, so he thought his son would serve as a much better representative of modern eating habits. Tom was allowed all of the Big Macs, French fries, chicken nuggets, and Coca-Cola as he wanted, and collected fecal samples before, during, and after his diet. Not while he was, not during his meal, during his diet. And after sending the samples to 3 different labs to ensure consistency, Cornell University's microbiome test results said that his microbes had been devastated, quote unquote. His father said that they saw massive shifts in his common microbe groups, and the gut microbes are a complex community of at least 1,000 different species of microorganisms that live in your digestive tract and are responsible for maintaining a healthy immune system, regulating digestion, and maintaining your weight. And, you know, the guy we were listening to from the TED Talk, he's Rob Knight. I don't see his bio here, but he was pretty... I thought he was a microbiologist. But anyway, Rob Knight was saying that, now I don't remember. Oh, that there were trillions of microbes. They outnumbered our DNA. I think it was trillions of microbial DNA. Outnumber our DNA 10 or 100 to 1 in our body. Anyway, Tom lost half of his bifidobacteria, which is the healthy bacteria designed to suppress inflammation in the digestive tract after eating McDonald's. And if you remember, you know, inflammation is the root to all disease in the body. When you start getting inflammation, that's when you start getting cancers and illnesses and breakdowns in the digestive tract that'll cause inflammatory bowel disease and digestive problems. And we're going to listen to some of that later. Dr. Mercola interviews talks about a lot of that and inflammation and how it's all connected. Anyway, he lost nearly, this kid, eating 10 days of McDonald's, 40% of his total bacteria variety. And even after 2 weeks from recovering from his diet and returning to his healthy balanced regimen, the microbes still were unable to recover. How frightening. So now we know a steady diet of fast food has the ability to kill healthy gut microbes in the body. Researchers can now focus on the importance of diversifying the gut. And over the last century, gut microbes of the human body have decreased by nearly a third. McDonald's rakes in $24 billion every year, and that's a lot of bad guts. And today around the world, more people can recognize the golden arches. And according to the Fast Food Nation, it is no surprise that 69% of the United States is either overweight or obese, which means in all likelihood their gut microbes are unhealthy and balanced. Now we found out that it could be then contagious. So even if we don't eat McDonald's, we could still be getting devastated gut bacteria by our brother or sister, cousin, the guy that sits next to us on the bus or the subway? You know, that the guy, Rob Knight, at the beginning, who's talking about all the different microbiota, said that they can, to like a 95% accuracy, identify you by the microbes on your mouse. We had done a story last year, the year before, about them when they first started doing forensics into microbes on the New York City subway system, and they were able to track people that way as well. So, you know, this whole understanding the microbiota, again, is a double-edged sword. Not only can they use it to make you healthy, but they can use it to manipulate you, change you, potentially make you sick or make you better, and track you. I mentioned this story on Friday. I found the link about a study I had found just recently where they had found with a cancer, I couldn't remember the cancer, that there was a cancer that all kinds of people had, and they all had a common mouth bacteria while having this cancer. Well, it happens to be pancreatic cancer, which is just as devastating if untreated as liver or kidney or any of those other. You go pretty fast when it's one of those organs that does filtering. Mouth bacteria may hold clues to pancreatic cancer risk. Few survive more than 5 years after a diagnosis of pancreatic cancer, so medical researchers are eager to find a way to diagnose and treat it sooner. A new study suggests that the presence of certain bacteria in your mouth could help identify, so this is the oral community, could help identify those at higher risk for this disease. Previous studies showed that gum disease, bleeding and swollen gums, and a greater number of missing teeth are associated with an increase in pancreatic cancer. Seems kind of odd, and how we can explain for that, he wondered, but he came up with his hypothesis about oral bacteria. And I'll guarantee you, I mean, I mentioned that the other day, too. They found, like, when you get a root canal, there's a lot more heart disease, and you got to be really super careful when they're doing a root canal or when they're taking out an old filling with all that bacteria that gets stuck between your teeth and all around in there, that you're not swallowing all that shit, because that stuff gets into you, and it can cause real imbalance and disease. It would be like waging war on your internal bacterial colonies. You know, one thing we got to remember, too, and this is why I'm going to tie all this back to glyphosate, is that not only are our bodies full of trillions of bacterial DNA strands that are interacting and merging and meshing with us, but, you know, the same sorts of ecosystems, and probably even more diverse because it's a much bigger place, occur on Earth, out on the forest floor, in the soil, and an entire web of life between the soil, the microbes that, you know, Dr. Huber talked about being completely decimated when they spray Roundup everywhere. It kills all of the beneficial soil bacteria. Oh, ding, ding. Kind of like killing all of our gut bacteria. And so then our environment gets ill because can't properly digest things in the soil. Oh, look, it's one big connection. Glyphosate, I'm telling you, is doing so much more damage than we even know. And then not only are they killing all of our gut bacteria, but that then is causing leaky gut, which this neurologist talks about, that then is allowing stuff that shouldn't be getting through that blood-brain barrier or that gut barrier, which is very similar, into our bloodstreams that can then incorporate DNA from genetically modified foods into you and me. I'm telling you guys, I see a really big black Sharpie line now. And this actually put some puzzle pieces together that I didn't catch before. And this is even uglier than it was before. So now we find out that not only can your gut bacteria be responsible for obesity and it can be contagious, but now we find out that pancreatic cancers and potentially other cancers, who the hell knows what, could be caused by bacteria in your mouth. And we find out that food we eat can affect the bacteria in our body, like fast food, McDonald's, 10 days. That's it. How many years were we doing fast food as kids? Think about it. McDonald's was a big thing when I was a kid. You know, nobody knew any better. And it was a treat to go get a hamburger and French fries. Well, be doing more damage to Johnny than you knew. Johnny's whole internal ecosystem. All right, let's pop on over, because I'm going to run out of time here. And I had 25 stories lined up for today, and I know that was being a little bit overly optimistic, knowing how I go off on tangents. But here we go. We're going to talk about one more thing, and then we're going to hear another clip. This is behavioral transplants. Yeah, I said it. This is out of Nature magazine, which actually it's not even a magazine. This is a science pub where they put a lot of their research. Behavioral transplants. 12 Canadian scientists accomplished something we have only heard about in science fiction. They transplanted a set of behaviors from one animal to another set of animals. And you'll never guess what part of these animals they physically transplanted in order to achieve this feat. It was not their brains, no, no, no. And it was not their hearts, no, no, no. It was their gut contents. They did a fecal transplant on mice, for God's sake. We heard about the phrase, you are what you eat. And remember, we played that. That was the old public service announcement back from the 70s. Time for timer, you are what you eat. We played that once on the show. But scientists have discovered the real truth. You are also what you poop. Science is rapidly discovering that the intestinal tract is a vast ecosystem of microbes. And the proportion of each microbe species present doesn't just influence digestion, but also your brain development, your cognition, and even your behavior. Now, wouldn't the mad scientists all wrapped into the government having a wild orgy really be excited to get their hands on that type of understanding? Being able to modify your brain development, your behavior, your immune system, so they can do whatever the hell they want. Yeah, I think they would be. This connection has been termed the microbiota gut-brain axis. And we've done a lot on that. I have quite a number of shows where we dug into that gut-brain axis. But I think that research has come a long way in the last year. And this is a new and growing area of research. Different strains of lab mice are known to have different personalities. Some are more anxious and skittish, while others are more easygoing and friendly. And when scientists looked at the microbes in their gut, they found that anxious mice and easygoing mice had different proportions of microbial species. Different microbe species seem to have different effects on their hosts. And while some gut microbes can cause illness, mice that have been raised so that they can never have any gut microbes have all kinds of problems, including symptoms of irritable bowel disease, obsessive compulsive disorder, depression, and autism. And you know, we talked about that link before as well. I really think it does have something to do with the microbiota. Suggesting that some microbe species are important for healthy brain functioning. So it isn't just about eating healthy to be healthy. It's eating healthy to keep your microbiome healthy so then you can be healthy in mind and body. Stephen Collins of McMaster University and his research collaborators tested the effects of gut microbes on behavior by giving BAL-BC mice either 7 days of oral antibiotics or water. The BAL-BC mice are a very timid and anxious mouse strain. And normally, the ones that are placed in a box that is half dark and half light will prefer to spend more time hiding on the dark side. These mice, also placed on an elevated platform, will hesitate and take a long time to step down to explore. And after a week of antibiotic treatment, mice given the antibiotic now had a different proportion of the microbe species in their guts, and they spent more time on the bright side of the light, dark box. And they were able to quickly step down from the elevated platform to explore. So by killing off the bacteria in the gut of the mice that they had assumed was responsible for their timid behavior, they no longer were timid mice. You know, they could go reverse as well. They could put stuff into our food. Think about it. that could take us from being brave to being little chicken shits that hide in a corner somewhere. This is pretty frightening, and they could do it through our food. Or they could do it through, we found out, I guess, gut microbes can go airborne. Naturally. The scientists then compared two specific strains of mice. They are known to exhibit very different behaviors. The Balxy mice are more anxious, whereas the National Institute of Health Swiss mice are more friendly and exploratory. As you would expect, then, the NIH Swiss mice typically spend more time on the light side of the box rather than the dark, and they step down more quickly from the platform. And the scientists then transferred the microbial gut contents, so they did a fecal transplant, from the Balbisi mice, which are the timid ones, to the National Institute of Health Swiss mice, which are the non-timid ones, and vice versa. And a week later, the normally outgoing and exploratory NIH Swiss mice were much more hesitant and anxious, where the normally anxious BALB, BALB C mice were not very exploratory. And they also found brain changes that corresponded to increasing anxiety in the Swiss mice and with the decreased anxiety in the BALB C mice. 2 weeks after that, the behavioral differences were still there, but the brain differences were not. The fact that these differences may be long or short-lived shows that there is likely an interaction between our genes and the ecologies of the microbial communities that live within us. And the behavioral effects of the microbial communities within us can be thought of as an extended phenotype. You know, we did phenotypes in genetics when you were doing the basic passing down of genetic traits. And one of the things that they had talked about with the microbiome is that it might not just be our genes that influences our traits and the traits of our offspring. And it's pretty interesting that now they're calling it an extended phenotype, because when you're born, you get all those bacteria from your mother. This is just really a lot to wrap our minds around for half a cup of coffee. But it's true. They are heritable. Babies born by cesarean section have different microbes than those that are born vaginally. We covered that. And twins have more similar microbes than other pairs of siblings. However, they are also changeable. Simply eating some yogurt, for example, seems to influence our gut microbes and behavior. But remember, too, yogurt, unless it's organic, yogurt has dairy byproducts, and a lot of the dairy byproducts has antibiotics unless you specially get antibiotic-free or organic. So that could be one reason. But on the other hand, there's also loads of digestive bacteria in there. And like I said, when you're eating something or taking something that has those bacterial colonies in them, and then they get into your bacterial colony, where are those colonies that you're buying from the store coming from? And is that going to change your behavior? Is that going to modify your microbiome and your gut to then change the way you think or feel? I think that's a very good question, because it's pretty frightening to think about. For some illnesses, we find a dramatic positive effect of fecal transplants in people. As gross as it may sound, fecal transplants have had a clinical cure rate as high as 92% for recurring CDI, which is that intestinal infection caused by C. difficile, compared to cure rates of less than 31% with other methods. Although data is still scarce, fecal transplants have also shown promise for treatments of obesity. Yeah, if you get your gut bacteria from a skinny person, diabetes, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, chronic fatigue syndrome, and autism. Still a field in its infancy, and we have so much to learn. But there you go, guys. I mean, if you can even get over how insane that is. And good old Billy Gates. Billy Gates is going to start feeding people genetically modified bananas untested before. $900 to the college kids who are going to step right up and taste them to see what happens. I mean, I'm almost thinking that with what we know now and how they're modifying X, Y, and Z and getting it into us, and they've been doing it since the 90s, and we've had this blossoming of these Western, quote-unquote Western diseases. How much of this they didn't already understand and they weren't tinkering with to see what was going to happen when they modified us to the point of being a new species? You know, they joked about us being human 2.0. But I guess tomorrow we're going to have to do the interview with Dr. Mercola and Dr. Perlmutter. He wrote a book called Brainmaker, The Power of Gut Microbes to Heal and Protect Your Brain for Life. And he's a neurologist who then really got into microbiology because he started seeing the connection. And I think we will. We're going to hit that tomorrow first thing, and we'll continue on. So, guys, well, if you can even believe it, it is Thursday. No, it's Monday. Holy crap. It's Monday. I wish it was Thursday. And make sure you stick around because Ms. Lonnie Clark is live up next. We have all kinds of great stuff. Mr. Brandon Turville has recorded us a brand new show for tonight, so I'll be cutting that up this afternoon. Tim Kelly with Our Interesting Times, Cutting Through the Matrix. Alan Watt is on the mend. I actually cut together his last two episodes where he put out an update on his health. So hopefully Alan Watt will be back to full steam really soon. We also have El Master News should be a new one tonight as well. And Anti-Media Radio live with Nick Burnaby and DB Schwartz at 11 p.m. All right, guys. Well, try and have a good Monday. Have some more coffee. I know I need it. And I will catch up with you tomorrow, and we will continue to look at how we're being mutated through our guts, unbeknownst to us, for our entire lives. All right, guys, have an awesome day, and I will catch up with you tomorrow. Everybody, take care.